The Gary Knoll Show, daily at noon on the Progressive Radio Network.
Live from New York City, it's the Gary Knoll Show. And now, your host, Gary Knoll.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll, and I'd like to welcome you to this program. A lot to share today. A special commentary on challenging the entire official medical establishment, the scientific establishment, and the American media. Why have you not looked at the historical facts that would expose the truth of the dangers and ineffectiveness of vaccines? We will do so today in a special commentary. Also today, our issue of the day, which I'll be asking you to call in and share your points of view. An economy destroyed, the enemy is Washington, Democrats and Republicans. You've been lied to. And I'm surprised that Keith Urban and Rachel Maddow and Ed Schultz and the others have not seen the bankruptcy of the arguments they're presenting. Well, Dr. Paul Craig Roberts will share a different point of view. My guest in the second part of our program will be Lisa Graves. She is Executive Director for Center for Media and Democracy and the publisher of PR Watch and Source Watch and Bankster USA. She previously served as a senior advisor in all three branches of the federal government. She was a strategist for the civil liberties advocacy. She was an adjunct law professor at one of the top law schools in the country, and she also was a deputy assistant attorney general in the U.S. Justice Department and chief counsel for nominations for the U.S. Senate Judiciary Committee and senior legislative strategist for the American Civil Liberties Union. What are we going to talk about? We're going to take a look at who writes all the laws in this country at the state level and the federal level. It is not your legislators. They know the game, you don't. And you'll see why this is so important to finally, hopefully, giving up the ghost that we have anything of a representative democracy. We do not. That's what we're going to share. Let's begin. I'm a believer that we should not be consuming coffee at all. The latest study is in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition to support this. I'll quote this as reported by Reuters. Consuming moderate amounts of coffee is associated with an increased levels of several inflammatory markers, a finding that could help explain previous reports linking the beverage to heart disease. Ongoing low-level inflammation is thought to be an underlying factor in the development of heart disease. The latest findings, which appear in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition, are based on a study of 3,000 subjects with no history of cardiovascular disease, and then seeing those who drank the most coffee had the highest findings. By the way, that fits right in with what we've been saying all along, that it's pro-inflammatory conditions that cause the biggest challenge to people, from Alzheimer's to arthritis, to diabetes. It's all about inflammation. For those men who would like to live a little longer, maybe 5 years longer, all you have to do is a little exercise. We're not even talking about the kind that I would advocate, just a little bit. This is the latest study, and this is from the Veterans Affairs Medical Center in Washington. It says, even a moderate amount of exercise can dramatically prolong a man's life, new research on middle-aged and elderly American veterans reveal. The government-sponsored analysis, the largest study ever done, found that a regime of brisk walking, 30 minutes a day, for 6 days a week was enough to cut by 50% the risk of dying a premature death from all causes. So that's good news. And 15,000 vets participated in this study. So get out and walk. I suggest an hour a day, plus do some resistance exercises. But that's good news. Keep you from dying from all causes. Well, here's something that will cause you to die. This is from Ed Stoddard, and it's a report in the peer-reviewed journal Circulation. And it says, meat and diet soda linked to heart disease. People eat two or more servings of red meat a day, that's most people, are more likely to develop conditions leading to heart disease and diabetes. And it increases metabolic syndrome by 25%. Now just think of how most people were led to believe that when they wake up in the morning they should have bacon and eggs or ham and eggs. And then for lunch, grilled cheese sandwich or hamburger, that's one of the most common ones, or hot dogs. And then for dinner, roast beef or steak or chicken, all that's meat. And that's how easy it is. We just live by these rituals, and they're wrong. Also, you've heard me suggest that today binge drinking is common. It is not an exception. It is the rule. Every single drink of alcohol you have destroys cells. Even wine will destroy cells. But the wine also has some chemicals in it, the polyphenols, and specific nutrients such as resveratrol, which actually help extend the life of some cells. But it also is destructive at the same time. Unless it's a homemade wine at 1% or 2% alcohol, then it wouldn't be a problem. But most are not that. So just imagine that you have regular alcohol, like beer. You don't get drunk. You're still killing your cells. Here's the latest on this. And this is from the American Society of Hypertension at their annual meeting. And it says, alcohol damages heart and arteries. Quote, drinking causes high blood pressure, stiff arteries, and rigid heart muscles in men and enlarged hearts in women, boosting the risk of having heart attacks and strokes. Of course, the more you drink, the more that's going to be a problem. Quote, we definitely see quite a deleterious effect, says Dr. Mahmoud at St. James Hospital in Dublin. So any alcohol increases oxidative stress and free radicals and destroys cells and speeds up the death of the DNA. So how about this? No alcohol. Lowering dietary fat can help prevent prostate cancer. These are important for men because most men throughout their life simply have too many types of fat that are unhealthy. So if you, for example, here's what this study says from Health Day. Quote, eating less polyunsaturated fat, the kind often found in fried goods, helps prevent prostate cancer in mice. The finding of the University of California, Los Angeles scientists believe is the first of its kind that closely mimics what would happen in human cancer. Well, just look at what's, you have a French fry, trans fats. You have a bagel, a muffin, you're getting fats. You have a steak, more fats and arachidonic acid from animal. You have dairy, fats. So just go on healthy fats. Healthy fats actually are just the opposite. They help prevent cancer and help keep your blood pressure lower, like olive oil. That's one of the best. But also black currant oil and pumpkin seed oil, walnut oil, almond oil, and flaxseed oil. Those are all good. Now, historically, we've been of the idea that for your brain to age, it takes a long time, so that the mistakes you make when you're younger ultimately always catch up with you. But you might be a binge drinker in your teens or in your 20s, and then you stop, and maybe you live a healthy life. It won't undo the damage. It becomes your weak link. That's been our belief. That belief has just been turned on its head. Here's something that we should consider. This is a report from the Alzheimer's Unit, Massachusetts General Hospital Institute for Neurodegenerative Disease. And it says the following. Alzheimer's plaques can form in 24 hours. We thought it was like 40 years. I'll quote this. An advanced imaging study has captured the fact that amyloid plaques, the harbingers of Alzheimer's disease, can develop in just 24 hours. They form more rapidly than expected, said Dr. Bradley Hyman, leader of the group reporting the finding in the issue of Nature. By the way, Nature is considered the ultimate scientific publication in the world. Now, once the plaques develop, damage is evident in nearby nerve cells almost immediately, he added. Quote, the study was done using an animal model of Alzheimer's disease and tried to sort out the order in which things occur. And what he did, he found microscopic imaging of with no plaques, and then, lo and behold, these amyloid plaques develop. And the same thing that happens in human brains. Quote, knowing that plaque occurs quickly implies that something initiates it. That is the next question to be answered. Hello? We already have that answer. We know what causes plaque. And here's what they clearly have not put together. This is part of the danger of monotheism within science. They are expert in one given area of cause and effect, but not cure or prevention. And so, for example, you've heard me say that whatever will cause the arteries and the epithelial tissue, the lining of your arteries and veins, to occlude, meaning to form plaque, will also cause the brain to create plaque. It's just called a different form of plaque, but it's still plaque. It's a fatty buildup. And therefore, you show me someone who's got clogged carotid artery, and I'll show you someone who's got premature dementia. Their brain is going to be aging much more rapidly than normal. And what causes all this? Several things. First, anything that causes inflammation. That's hot dogs, hamburgers, smoking, alcohol, french fries, coffee, soft drinks, most sugary foods, deep fried foods, animal fried products, environmental toxins. All that causes inflammation. On top of that is stress. That causes inflammation with a release of cortisol. Then that causes, over a period of time, the plaque to build up. But now we're told that plaque can build up real quick in as little as 24 hours. More often than not, I would associate that plaque building up with, let's say, the consumption of a high-fat diet. And then the body tries to break this down, but it's not easy to do. And then we're now seeing people with lower lifespans, and I've seen at least 7 separate studies to show that we're losing the gains we've made in the lifespan, depending upon the part of America that you live in. But it's not just the part of America, it's what the diet is in those parts. And the one group of people who have the highest diabetes, that are overweight, that suffer the greatest number of depression and heart attacks, are in the South. Now, I'm talking about the South as a band, from Texas going over through Louisiana and Alabama, Mississippi, Kentucky, Tennessee, Arkansas, Georgia, North Carolina, South Carolina, and Florida. That's the band. That's where you have the most of these illnesses. You also have the highest level of diabetes, and you also have people living shorter lives. So we're living less than what we did. We're reversing all those gains. And that's because the diet. Go into any of the places and you'll see all-you-can-eat buffets. And almost all that food is bad food. It's not organic. It's heavily cooked. There's lots of chemicals in it. Lots of MSG, lots of salt, lots of fried food, lots of barbecued food. And people gorge themselves on this. That leads to, well, according to this, that could lead to pro-inflammation, which can lead to Alzheimer's early in life. So it's all in the lifestyle. It's all something we can prevent, but at least they came up with one piece of it. Now, they won't say, is there anything else out there that could cause inflammation? Yeah, they're not going to do that. And then they don't say, we could prevent this if we change our lifestyle. They won't do that either. And they won't look for natural ways to break down this plaque, which we know we can do through exercise, natural chelating agents, and detoxification. They won't do that either. It's a very Byzantine way that we do our science in the United States. The high cost of low status, feeling powerless, leads to expensive purchases. This is from Science Daily. And here's what it says. This is from the Journal of Consumer Research. I'll quote this. Feeling powerless can trigger strong desires to purchase products that are of high status value. In a study that may explain why so many Americans are so deeply in debt, still spend beyond their means, the authors, both Kellogg School of Management at Northwestern University, found that research subjects who were asked to recall times when someone else had power over them were willing to pay higher prices for status symbol items. Quote, this increased willingness to pay for status-related objects stems from the belief that obtaining such objects will indeed restore a lost sense of power. Okay, what can we then extend this to in our current lives? Just think of all the wealthy people that have to have the big cars and the big mansions and the yachts and the planes and the expensive jewelry and the private jets. Think of all the things people will spend their money on that really doesn't increase the quality of their life, nor joy or happiness, but it gives them a different sense of status. How would you know someone is rich unless they spent something and showed it? So you have to have something that designates you as powerful. And I was out in L.A. recently and filming, and I went to an old place that I used to interview some very famous old celebrities that I was counseling from the old Hollywood. And this goes back years ago. And there was I was talking with one of the people who worked there, and I said, tell me about the status of this place. And he just smiled. He said, everything here is based upon status. He pointed over and he said, see that gentleman sitting over there in the corner? That's considered the most important table in the restaurant. When you sit there, you're considered the top player in the city. And then who gets invited to sit at that table means that you are getting involved in the inner circle of power. Who sits in the tables around that table, where they can frequently hear the conversation, that's also the up-and-coming people. And he said the whole restaurant is laid out by where a person sits. So the food has nothing to do with eating there. It's status. So that man shows his status by going to a place that does not have particularly good food, but is known as a pecking order place, that where you sit determines the perception of how important you are in that city. And he said some people will come there every day and bribe, trying to get a different seat that makes them be perceived of as more important. He said that's generally the younger guys in their 20s and 30s who have a lot of money, who've generally earned it in the financial market, who one of them bragged that how close they were to this one seat in this one restaurant. And that isn't the only restaurant nor the only seat. This happens many times in different places. Where, for example, in New York for a long time, people at one of the most famous nightclubs in New York City used to tip the maitre d' large amounts of money, $1,000, $2,000, just to get the seat that would, the place would be packed, and yet there'd be an empty table right in the front of the stage. and they would be walked up there. And just that walk up to that table and being seated, suddenly everybody would acknowledge, and a lot of these guys were just organized crime figures. But they had the cash to pay. And just for this perception, it's all about illusion. It's all about image. So now we're understanding a lot of people who don't have any money, don't have savings, cannot afford the bill when it comes in, will go out there just to raise their sense of self-esteem by buying something they think will, in the public eye, make them seem more significant. Kind of stupid, isn't it? But that's what happens. That's the latest study on that. And finally, how cell phones may cause autism. And let me quote this. This says the following. Rates of autism, a disabling neurodevelopmental disorder, have increased nearly 6,000% since the late 1970s, with the most significant increases occurring in the last decade. The cause of autism is unknown, although theories include such potential causes, and it goes through all these other causes. But now they're adding EMR, the pulsed energy. The study involved over 5 years of research on children with autism and other membranes sensitivity disorders, and found that the electromagnetic pulses negatively affect cell membranes and allows heavy metal toxins, which are associated with autism, to build up in our bodies. Meanwhile, the researchers point out that autism rates have increased concurrently along with the proliferation of cell phones and wireless use. And the researchers say the electromagnetic pulses could impact autism by facilitating early onset of symptoms or by trapping heavy metals inside of nerve cells, which could accelerate the onset of symptoms. So that's another way. Now, why does this have some plausibility? Because almost all the kids that are given chelation therapy and have heavy metals in their body, aluminum, for example, lead and mercury, they improve substantially. So there is an association with heavy metals. I'm Gary Knoll, back in a moment. Please stay with us. Our program. I'm Gary Knoll. And now for our issue, and then I'd like your calls coming in. I'm sure that you are as frustrated as I am when we see the individuals on the left and the right talking about who's to blame for not going forward and raising the debt limit and how they're going to do it and what compromises have to be made. And I saw through this a long time ago, as I'm sure many of you have. Recently, the bond rating agencies that gave us junk derivatives, AAA ratings, threatened to downgrade U.S. Treasury bonds if the White House and Congress did not reach a deficit reduction deal and debt ceiling increase. Now, the downgrade threat is not legitimate at all. It's not credible. And neither is the deficit threat. Both are make-believe crises that are being hyped in order to force cutbacks in Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security. Now, if the rating agencies downgraded treasuries, the company executives would be arrested for the fraudulent ratings that they gave to the junk that Wall Street peddled to the rest of the world. The companies would be destroyed and their ratings discredited. Do you remember that virtually all those rating agencies were giving the worst of the worst possible companies AAA ratings, and that's why people continued to believe in them? It was all fraud. Now, the U.S. government would never default on its bonds because the bonds, unlike those of Greece and Spain and Ireland, are payable in its own currency. Regardless of whether the debt ceiling is raised, the Federal Reserve will continue to purchase the Treasury's debt. If Goldman Sachs is too big to fail, then, my friends, so is the United States government. There is no budget focus on the illegal wars and military occupation that the United States government has underway in at least six countries, or the 66-year-old U.S. occupations of Japan and Germany, and the ring of military bases being constructed around Russia. The total military security budget, as you've heard me mention many times on this program, is around $1.4 trillion, or 77% of the federal budget's deficit. In contrast, Social Security is completely solvent. Medicare expenditures are coming close to exceeding the 2.3% payroll tax that funds Medicare, but it's dishonest for both politicians on the left and the right and pundits in the media to blame the U.S. budget deficit on entitlement programs. Entitlements are funded with a payroll tax. Wars are not funded. The criminal Bush regime lied to Americans and claimed that the Iraq War would only cost $70 billion at the most and would be paid back shortly thereafter with Iraqi oil revenues. When Bush's chief economic advisor, Larry Lindsey, said the Iraq invasion would cost $200 billion, the White House fired him. In fact, Lindsey was off by a factor of 20. Economic and budget experts have calculated the Iraq and Afghan wars have consumed $4,000 billion. That's $4 trillion out of pocket already. And in other words, the ongoing wars and occupations have eaten through $4 trillion, by which Obama hopes to cut federal spending over the next 10 years. Well, what's he going to do? Bomb now and pay later? As taxing the rich is not part of the political solution, the focus is on rewarding the insurance companies by privatizing Medicare. That's the real game. Understand, later in the program when my guest comes on, you will hear this discussed, that the game was always with the healthcare game. It wasn't about giving you good healthcare. It was about giving the insurance companies about $400 billion in extra revenue a year from new customers. And all this right now, it's about privatizing Medicare at some future date with government-subsidized insurance premiums or vouchers by capping Medicaid and by loading the diminishing middle class with additional Social Security taxes. Now, Washington's priorities and those of its prestitutes could not be clearer. President Obama, like George Bush before him, both parties in Congress, the print and TV media, NPR have all made it clear that war is a far more important priority than health care and our pensions for our aging population. The American people and their wants and needs are not represented in Washington at all. Washington serves powerful interest groups such as the military security complex, Wall Street and the banksters, agribusiness and the oil companies, the insurance companies and the pharmaceutical companies, and the mining and timber companies. Washington endows these interests with excess profits by committing war crimes and terrorizing foreign populations with bombs and drones and invasions, by deregulating the financial sector, by bailing it out of its greed-driven mistakes after it has stolen America's pensions, homes, and jobs, by refusing to protect the land, air, and water, and oceans and wildlife from polluters and despoilers, and by constructing a health care system with the highest cost and highest profits in the world. The way to reduce health care cost is to take out the costs and profits with a single-payer system, universal health care. A private health care system can continue to operate alongside for those who can afford it or want it. The way to get the budget under control is to stop gratuitous wars, wars that will end, I believe, in nuclear confrontation. The U.S. economy is in a deepening recession from which recovery is simply not possible. Because America's middle-class jobs in manufacturing and professional services have been offshored and given to foreigners, the U.S. gross domestic product, consumer purchasing power, and tax base have been handed over to China, India, and Indonesia in order that Wall Street and shareholders and corporate CEOs can earn more money. When the goods and services produced offshore come back to America, they arrive as imports. The trade balance worsens, the U.S. dollar declines further in exchange value, and price rises for Americans whose incomes are stagnant or falling. This is economic destruction. It always occurs when an oligarchical group seizes control of a government. The short-run profits of the powerful are maximized at the expense of the viability of the economy. The U.S. economy is driven by consumer demand, but with 22.3% unemployment, the real number, stagnant and declining wages and salaries, and consumer debt burden so high that consumers cannot borrow to spend, there's nothing to drive the economy. Washington's response to this dilemma is to increase the austerity, cutting back Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security, forcing down wages by destroying unions and offshoring jobs, which results in a labor surplus and even lower wages, and driving up the price of food and energy by depreciating the dollar further. That all erodes consumer purchasing power. The Federal Reserve can print money to rescue the crooked financial institutions, but it cannot rescue the American consumer. As a final point, confront the fact that you are even lied to about deficit reduction. Even if Obama gets his $4 trillion deficit reduction over the next decade, it does not mean that the current national debt will be $4 trillion less than it currently is. The reduction merely means that the growth in the national debt will be $4 trillion less than otherwise. Regardless of any debt reduction, the national debt 10 years from now will be much higher than it presently is, and you will suffer even more. I'm Gary Nall. Your turn. Give us a call back. We'll take some calls before we go to our guest. Our number to call in is 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. Jersey. Hi, Dan. You're on the air.
Hi, Gary. I'm a truck driver. I've been listening to your show since I started this job in September. I'd like to say it's a great show. Thank you for all the information. My question for you is, I'm a young person, and I can tell most of my peers seem dormant about this subject. They don't really have a sense of any purpose or care towards our economic struggles. And I want to know what I can do to share this with other people, or also your insight into why people my age don't care about this topic so much.
Have you ever heard of the author W. Somerset Maugham?
No.
He said that it is dangerous to let the public behind the scenes. They are easily disillusioned, and then they are angry with you, for it was the illusion they loved. So as long as Bill O'Reilly's audience look at him as the weaver of illusions, that we are great and noble country, we are selfless, we are good, our troops are all honorable, our wars are just, and then they will continue to do nothing. As long as the reality shows allow us to see people denigrating and excoriating each other on the emotional and spiritual level, then that is what the message is. When people see others binge drinking and then think, well, how hip am I if I'm moderately drinking? And what does it mean if I don't drink at all? Then by this exclusion of what is real, we draw ourselves further into this world of illusion. where everything then is illusion. Everything. And it was the great Arthur Koestler who said nothing is more sad than the death of an illusion. And virtually every one of our institutions, educational, our government, our religious institutions, our financial institutions, all are based upon illusions. All of them. And therefore, what would it mean for a person to want to see the truth? First, you would have to go find it. Then, to find it, you would have to know how to process it, because all your emotions that you use, all your thoughts each day, come from someone else, more often than not, reminding you to stick with the official script. Don't go off script. And the script is that live by what you're taught. So you live this way. So the youth of today, they're not told to sacrifice by going into the streets. They don't look at themselves as in any way associated with the 100 million young people in the Middle East who are protesting, or those who protested in Ireland or Spain or Greece.
Right.
Because they don't see themselves. They feel entitled because their parents spoiled them. The
right.
parents did everything for them. They could not fail. If you screwed up, if you lied, if you were selfish, if you were conceited, if you didn't care about anyone else, you were still loved and appreciated and given this glorious hug each day as if the sun rose on you. And hence people took it to be that they were special, and therefore they did not have to consider the needs of anyone else. So everything today, when you speak with any young person, it's about how they feel.
I've seen the same type of behavior when I was at university, too. I was going to a county college where we had great professors and great programs, but my peers didn't seem interested at all, and it seemed like they had this great opportunity in front of them, and they really weren't taking it by the horns. So I understand completely where you're coming from, and it really resonates with me when you speak about it.
I just believe that almost everything we're doing in life today is a lie. And I believe that as long as the baby boomers who started all this nonsense, and their children, the X generation who perpetuated it, and the Y generation who's clueless about everything and not wanting to know more, and selfish in that not wanting, they can tell you about how they felt after they binge drank and how many friends with benefits they laid with. But man, can they tell you anything about, what about global warming? I don't know, dude. How about that hamburger? I don't know, dude. How about the drugging of our children? Don't care, dude. It's like nobody cares about anything except what's in it for me. How are you going to make me feel today? It's about how you feel.
And also the generation before us, you try to speak about these topics to them, like parents, our parents' generation. It's almost like you are like speaking out against their like ritualistic love affair with the American dream that's supposed to be going on right now. It's still supposed to be surfing on, because they don't even want to address these topics, and you're looked at as almost like an alien figure for having an opinion about anything, or even questioning what our government's doing or what corporations are doing
in our
country.
If you question corporations, then you're un-American. If you question the wars, you're un-American. If you question capitalism, you're un-American. If you question the legitimacy of some of the maniacal religious leaders, you're ungodly. So no matter what argument you put forth, no matter how reasonable and legitimate your argument, it cannot be even entertained, because it makes someone feel uncomfortable, and therefore that lack of comfort stops discussion. I appreciate
Thanks.
Your call. Thanks.
Thank you, Gary.
Steve from New Jersey, you're on. Steve, you're on.
Hello.
Yeah, hi.
Oh, hi. How are you?
Good.
I'm a first-time listener to your radio show. I just tuned in today. I'm painting the interior of a house, and I liked a lot what you were saying about Obama and whatnot in your prior conversation with that young fellow, young myself. And there's a lot of, you know, negative stigma towards our future and, you know, as far as the economy goes and our financial problems. And a lot of young people, I believe, are very concerned and wonder, you know, what we're going to be facing, you know, what is yet to come as a result of our past mistakes and the people who run this country. And I was wondering if you might want to touch on that, if you have any predictions or ideas.
Sure. I predict that the current generation will hit 40% unemployment within 2 years. The difference
wow.
is you will not go to the streets unless
yeah.
there's a beer party, because there is no motivation to join on a political level because you would be challenging the entire political establishment. It's all corrupt. There is no good. There's no good ending to this story for your generation, unless unless you start looking at what they've done with the rising in the Middle East. They went to the streets because they didn't have food. You have food. They didn't have jobs. You don't have jobs, or you don't have the jobs you want. But they would sometimes work 18 hours a day and still not have enough to pay for food. You've got to understand the suffering of the world around you and what's happening, and connect yourself with the political movements, the educational movements, the social movements, the cultural movements of the world around you. You cannot have a future if you're disconnected to the world that you live in. So motivate yourself. Also, stop buying the things you now give your money to. Don't go into another shopping mall. Don't start turning off the television, and don't buy the things that support the corporate economy that is going to be what's keeping you disempowered and unemployed. Take your money out of those banks and put it into credit unions. Stop using your debit card. If you can't afford it, don't buy it. If you don't need it, don't have it. And become politically and socially aware. Start connecting. Why do you think I founded the Progressive Radio Network? Why do you think we're the fastest growing network in the world, with more people coming, listening each day than any place else? Because there's a lot of young people around the world, not so much in the United States, but around the world, who want to see positive change. And they know that none of their political institutions are going to allow that change. There's no political institution in Italy, in England, in Germany, in Ireland. Those institutions will be overthrown, but they will not change. The paradigm never changes itself. It does not surrender power, and it will never surrender power to young people. And that's unfortunate, because we have a lot of enlightened young people. We have some very intuitive young people who are committed to higher ideals, but they don't know how to connect. So now read the articles, watch documentaries, listen to radio programs by progressive voices, and then connect with that energy. At the same time, disconnect from the hamburgers, the hot dogs, the french fries, the coffee, because every time you have a cup of coffee, do you know whether or not those coffee beans were grown by someone who was working at slave labor? Do you know that when you buy one of those jeans that are selling for $400 at your local mall that you just got to have, that someone was probably working 18 hours a day under slave labor at 5 cents an hour or 14 cents an hour in Bangladesh to make? Now, if someone says, you can have the jeans, but understand, here's the picture of the woman who's going to be working at a long time at this table and be hit with a switch if she talks with anyone, will only be allowed to go to the bathroom twice a day. Do you really want to engage that? So if you had that choice, I'm sure you and the vast majority of other people seeing that reality would say, no, I don't need this pair of jeans if some human being has to suffer. You would immediately see a transformation in the vast majority of Americans, but they don't see this truth. We have edited versions of everything. We don't see the 1 million dead Iraqis. We don't see Hillary and Bill Clinton and Madeleine Albright's 500,000 dead Iraqi children from their sanctions. We don't see the landmines that our companies in the United States, which refuse to sign a treaty to ban those landmines. We don't see the legs being blown off around the world in Cambodia and other places. We don't see the kind of stupidity that comes when you have a war on drugs and a privatized prison system, and what happens when you have to spend time in jail. Wouldn't it be nice if every member of Congress had to go to prison for 6 months without anyone knowing that they were there to test to see what's going to happen with the laws they produce? Wouldn't it be interesting? What do you want to bet they get rid of those laws on drugs real quick? And, of course, you get rid of narco-terrorism. So on every level, you have to become aware. The more aware you become, the more you can engage in the solutions. Without that awareness or indifference, then you continue to be a part of the problem. Thank you very much for your call. I see we're running out of time. I want to go to my guest. And let's get our guest up, and then we'll go over and say hello to my guest in just a second. And I will hold my commentary on vaccines, the real history of vaccines, to our next program. And Sunday night, 8 o'clock, I will be doing my health hour, 8 to 9 o'clock on Progressive Radio Network. My guest is online now, so let's say she's okay. We're trying to find my guest, and We'll take a quick music break and come right back with my guest. Please stay with us.
Turn a gray sky blue. You see, I can make it rain when I want it to. Oh, I can build a castle from a single grain of sand. Yeah. You see, I can make a ship sail on dry land. Yeah.
Nice to have you with us, everyone. We will be running over with this hour because I'm going to give my guests full time because we have extra time today. And for the land-based stations, when we come to the end of the hour you're listening, you can switch over on the Internet to progressiveradionetwork.com and hear the complete interview with my guest who's on now. And I was told that all of our lines were lit up. Hundreds of people tried to get through. And on our next program, I will certainly set more time aside. I didn't realize that would touch such a chord, but it did. My guest now is Lisa Graves. As I mentioned earlier in the interview, or in the introduction to her, she is Executive Director of the Center for Media and Democracy, the publisher of PR Watch and Source Watch in Bankster USA. She previously served as a senior advisor in all three branches of our federal government, as a leading strategist on civil liberties advocacy, and as an adjunct law professor at one of the top law schools in the country. And her former leadership posts include a deputy assistant attorney general at the U.S. State Department, or the U.S. Department of Justice, and chief counsel for nominations for the U.S. Senate Judiciary Committee and senior legislative strategist for the American Civil Liberties Union. And it's nice to have you with us today.
Thanks, Gary. Thanks for having us on.
I'd like to start with just an overview, and then if you could lead us from that overview into the specifics of what we're going to talk about, the American Legislative Exchange Council, or ALEC, and what it means. Here's my overview. It's really simple. The American public believes that virtually all of our laws at the state and local level and regulations are written after careful and measured input by people who are trying to serve the community, the people who voted them, to see what would be the impact upon them and try to have the best possible impact. If it's a health issue, safety first on behalf of the public, and risk is weighed always risk-benefit ratio, but historically it has been, gee whiz, with DDT, it took us years to get rid of DDT, so who was benefiting? So the public is under that impression. But when I look at this, I'm seeing lobbyists from virtually every major group imaginable meeting with legislators or legislative aides and then influencing legislation, so much so that in one particular bill I can talk with some certainty on because I did a whole documentary, am doing a whole documentary on it, the Medicare bill. Medicare bill that the pharmaceutical industry wrote almost all of that, including provisions that would not allow any governmental agency to get a lower generic drug. In other words, if there was a drug that a person got in a hospital under Medicaid or Medicare or the VA for $50 for a month's supply, they made sure that you weren't able to get it for $2 for a month's supply, the same identical drug. And the legislators were not given advanced copies of this. The 1,300-page was given to them that morning, and they voted on it in the next morning. And the people who pushed that immediately left and went to work for the Pharmaceutical Advertising Council and other places. So that my larger question is, how much of the laws that are written and rules that are taken away or put in place really come from the legislator thinking well about what is in the best interest of the public, or how much that comes from special interest group working quietly behind the scenes and their facilitators to see that their way gets done? That's where I'd like for you to take it, if you would, please.
Sure, Gary. So, you know, I think that just to take off on a point that you mentioned, I think most Americans, whatever their political background is, most Americans understand that corporations have far too much influence in our policy, that they have too much power, that their money is having a tremendous effect distorting our public policy. And we've seen a lot of surveys of the public that recognize this, and yet that doesn't always translate to how they vote in terms of the elections. And that's in part because it is the case that the corporations spread the money around to both parties, and as elections have become more expensive with, you know, this focus on advertising and TV advertising, it has fueled sort of an arms race, in essence, in raising money and raising money from corporations. So the reality is that even before last year's decision by the U.S. Supreme Court on the Citizens United case, which basically said that corporations have a First Amendment right, just like people, to spend unlimited money in our elections, influencing our elections, that they have a free speech right to do so. Even before that terrible activist right-wing decision, the fact that I think many recognize is that corporate money has corrupted our political process here in the U.S. But it hasn't sort of corrupted it equally, I suppose, despite the fact that the money is spread around to both major political parties. What we've seen is certainly this spring in legislatures across the country, where there's been one-party rule, that money from some of the most sort of extreme anti-regulatory corporations has had a tremendous impact on rewriting our laws. And in particular, what we have seen, what we have uncovered through documents that we obtained from a whistleblower, what we've uncovered is that there is a enormous effort on the part of corporations, certain corporations and industries, to rewrite our laws, usually aided and abetted by Republican legislators. There's an organization that you mentioned called the American Legislative Exchange Council. Exchange might be exactly the right word for what they do, like the stock exchange. They put together, in essence, marry legislators and corporations. They put them on task forces on each of the areas, major areas of law, including health law, as you mentioned. And these corporations and legislators, primarily Republicans, the leadership of ALEC is 103 Republican legislators and one Democratic legislator on their board, their task forces, and their state chairmanships. And these legislators vote as equals with corporations on what they describe as model bills, which are bills. That then these legislators, after these bills are approved by ALEC, these legislators go back to the state houses across the country and introduce them without any reference to the American Legislative Exchange Council, without any notice to the public that these bills were already pre-approved, pre-cooked, pre-ratified, pre-voted on by corporations. And some people have dismissed this revelation as basically business as usual, but I don't think it's business as usual, and it certainly shouldn't be policymaking as usual. And I think the American people have a right to know if corporations are voting on bills with legislators as if they are equal to them in our sort of process, secretly behind closed doors, and then these legislators launder these bills, introduce them as their own ideas in our state legislators, these McBills, these cookie cutter bills, and try to radically change our laws without telling people what's been going on.
I appreciate that overview. Let me read from The Spin, ALEC Exposed, news and analysis from the Center for Media and Democracy. Quote, "The American Legislative Exchange Council, ALEC, is a secretive and influential group that facilitates a synergistic alliance between many of the most powerful corporations in the world and state legislators. Through ALEC task forces, corporations and politicians vote behind closed doors to approve model bills that you were just talking about and resolutions that are then ratified by ALEC's board of politicians. Elected officials then try to pass these bills and resolutions in state houses across the country without disclosing to the people they represent the role of corporations and what they played in pre-approving such efforts to rewrite our laws through ALEC. And then it goes into how each one of these, like the Coke connection, and then bills in Wisconsin. So what we're seeing, and by the way, I'll tell you why I think this is very important, because 2 years ago in New York State, I was told with just 24 hours before there was to be a complete vote, and the government already of New York's David Paterson said he would sign it, that every person in the state of New York who was in health care would have to receive 4 vaccines, all of which contained thimerosal, the ethyl mercury. That would be 56,000 nurses, orderlies, physicians, anyone who works in a nursing home, assisted living center, or hospital. And when I heard about this, since I support freedom of choice, we rallied 1,600 nurses, doctors, and activists from this audience. We took a bus caravan all within just one day to Albany. We had about 100 placards out there. Fox and Bloomberg covered it. We had a chance to meet with the 3 doctors from the state, the highest-ranking doctors. And I asked them, I said, how is it that you had no hearings on this? The hearings were to follow the bill. I had never heard of this before. You pass a law, then you have hearings on the law? That made no sense to me. And I said, how is it that you have not divulged who came to you, which vaccine manufacturers, which of their lobbyists, which of the pharmaceutical industry reps came and told you why this would be a good thing? We should know that. And you could just see they were just completely flustered by this. So while this was going on, I had a person dressed up like a lawyer go through every member of the state assembly in Albany and give out a copy of a 110-page document we had made up the day before showing why the mercury at 24 micrograms per shot or 100 micrograms could do serious damage to a person's brain and why it should be voluntary, not mandatory for healthcare workers. In any case, they finally got around to holding hearings. We had 225,000 people call and protest this, and we won the day. At one point, a legislator came forward and said to me, just thought you'd know, there's been an enormous amount of pressure up here by special interest groups who are saying that, you know, you've got to get this passed, it's got to be done, it'll save lives, and nobody was here to challenge it. They had no one offering a counterbalancing opinion. And I said, how often this goes on? He just laughed at him. He says, with every single piece of legislation we put through, he said, this legislation doesn't originate with us, it originates with a special interest group. He said, I hope someone exposes this at some point. He said, I'm embarrassed by how corrupt our system has become. This is one of the New York State legislators telling me this. Your thoughts on this, please?
Well, I think that it is a sad but true remark about how legislation is done in this day and age. And quite frankly, the American people who are sort of busy desperately trying to save their jobs, trying to save their homes, and keep food on the table and pay their bills, don't have unlimited time to spend keeping an eye on their legislatures, keeping an eye on these legislators and watching every bill that gets introduced. We, in a representative democracy, we count on the people that we, the people, elect to actually represent us. You know, corporations can't actually vote in our elections, because the right to vote is a sacred right of people. It's a right that the American people fought to have, fought the War of Independence with England to have a right to vote. That right to vote was expanded, fortunately, over time to enfranchise men and women, to enfranchise people of all races who were born here.
And that right, that sacred right of human beings, has really been eroded and corrupted through this process. So while you vote for your representative to go to your state house or Congress to represent you, and whether the person is from your party or not, you're still, in essence, counting on them representing the people in your home state. And in fact, these legislators get to the state houses, and it turns out that the people they spend most of their time with are corporate lobbyists, corporations who don't have a right to vote because they're not people. They don't have a sacred sort of human freedom to vote, but they have tons of money to spend on lobbyists and tons of money to spend on campaign donations and PACs, political action committees, and on preparing model bills or legislation for legislators to introduce. The idea that legislators would pass something and then have a hearing about it is really rather extraordinary. But I'm not sure it's more extraordinary than basically pre-approving legislation and then sort of having the kabuki theater of it being subject to full consideration. I'm not sure how the people can weigh a bill that's introduced as if it is the idea of that legislator, when in fact that legislator perhaps voted on it behind closed doors already, side by side with corporations voting on it behind closed doors without any disclosure of that activity at all. I'm not sure how the American people can have any insight or, there's no transparency to that, and I think that's a fundamentally corrupting act.
Could you give us, please, some of the most egregious examples of what they've done with their so-called model bills and that we were not aware of? And also, could you explain the shock doctrine policies of ALEC, frequently sponsored by the Koch brothers and their enormous fortune, to push these things through?
Well, I would say that those questions are pretty enormous questions, but let me take the second part first, which is to say Naomi Klein wrote a tremendous book called The Shock Doctrine, which really explains, it has deep, deep insights into what's been happening in our economy and the sort of spoils system that has come out of this crisis. So her book I would commend to your listeners to read fully. But let me just sort of give an example here in Wisconsin, where the center is located, the Center for Media Democracy. And as in Wisconsin, as with many states, we've lost an enormous number of manufacturing jobs due to these free trade policies, so-called free trade policies that have been pushed by global corporations, and they've been pushed by politicians of both parties. But you might recall, and some of your listeners might recall, that in the 80s it actually wasn't popular. It wasn't popular to be pushing free trade. We had what were described as protectionist policies to protect our industries, because working people from both sides of the aisle, at least some number, knew that there's no way for the American worker to compete with virtually slave labor wages of a developing nation or third world country or a country like China. The idea that the American worker is supposed to be competitive with countries that have much lower standards of living and don't pay their workers very much at all, it's an astonishingly wrong-headed concept. The fact is that many countries have a long-standing history of protecting their workers. But to go back to Wisconsin, we've lost an enormous number of manufacturing jobs that have been shipped overseas. These corporations invested in politicians to push these free trade policies, and we've lost those jobs. And then on top of it, we had this incredible deregulation push, starting with Reagan, pushed by the Koch brothers. So David Koch's organization that he helped found in the 1980s, a group called the Citizens for a Sound Economy, took the stock market shock in 1987 as license to push not for regulation of stock market and stock trading, but to push for the repeal of Glass-Steagall protections, which were the you know, hard-line protections against banks engaging in gambling in Wall Street securities. They took a couple of years, and they did. And then our, you know, ultimately our economy crashed in the wake of extraordinary gambling by the banks and by Goldman Sachs and by Wall Street. And so there's no surprise here that we have a revenue crisis. We have fewer Americans working in Wisconsin and elsewhere. We have fewer American companies employing people here, in part because of the free trade policies. We have an overall crisis, in part by the incredible spending on wars by Bush without increasing taxes to cover those wars. And so the states have some deficits. They've got some deficits. So, you know, instead of actually dealing with those deficits by ensuring that corporations pay their fair share, corporations that are in the state that are, you know, putting profits overseas or banking profits in a low tax state like Nevada, instead of making sure that corporations that are here pay their fair share and actually banding together with other states to ensure that all the states, to the extent possible, stand together and ensure that corporations pay their fair share, instead we have a race to the bottom. And in a crisis like this, where there are some shortfalls in revenue, rather than have a reasonable dialogue about, you know, how much an ordinary person pays in taxes versus a corporation, instead we have these vultures come into office who use this crisis as a way to basically destroy the public school system, cut funding for schools, cut funding for teachers, cut funding for social services, cut funding for people who are disabled. You know, the idea that we can't even pay what a person, you know, pay back to a person what they have invested in Social Security, and Social Security payments are very small. You can't, you can barely maintain a household on them, if that. They're exceedingly low. The idea that you can't pay a basically poverty-level amount of retirement pension through Social Security because you can't tax corporations is a product of this perverse ideology that has taken hold. That ideology is one that is manifest throughout these ALEC bills. It's one that basically privileges corporate profits over the people's interests. It elevates greed to the highest value, and it suggests a sort of an economic solution that we've seen repeated on right-wing talk radio. We've seen it repeated in halls of Congress by leaders like John Boehner and Eric Cantor and other ALEC alums, that only rich people create jobs, when in fact, you know, demand creates jobs. What creates demand? American workers having money in their pockets. And we've seen, whether it's Carly Fiorino at Hewlett-Packard shipping jobs overseas and pocketing huge CEO bonuses and benefits, that money isn't reinvested in American jobs. It's invested in people's private stock portfolios to make them richer while Americans lose their jobs.
I really appreciate all that you and your organization are doing. Hopefully people will pay more attention to realize who's really writing the rules behind the scenes with their politicians, and they can go to prwatch.org and get up on all of this and read the articles I've been reading. Thank you very much for being on with us today.
Oh, Gary, thank you so much. ALEC Exposed is .org is the main site where the bills are, and we do have summaries of the top major, most outrageous bills that people can take a look at.
We appreciate it very much.
Thanks, Gary. Thank you.
I'm Gary Knoll. That was Lisa Graves, and we're out of time. Sorry we ran over today, but I just needed to get all this out. Please stay tuned for Danny Schechter. He's back from China, and I'm sure he's got a lot of interesting things he's going to be sharing with us on Progressive Radio Network.
Yeah.
As long as it's swinging.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh.
Gary Knoll Show is produced in our New York City studio. The producer is Richard Gale. The engineer is Matt Fogart. All shows are archived by Joe Kemp. The chief archivist is Sharon Pride. And the program director is Jason Taubenfeld.